You're listening to Proof to Product, brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp, and this is episode number 13. We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to another episode of Proof to Product. Today I sat down with Jen Gotch, the Chief Creative Officer and fearless leader of Bando. Jen founded Bando in 2008 with no prior business experience and was able to transform it from a small, vintage, one-of-a-kind hair accessory company into a million-dollar brand within years. I had the pleasure of working with Jen when she spoke at our Trade Show Bootcamp Business Camp conference, and she's not only a wealth of information, but she's passionate about helping creative entrepreneurs succeed. On today's episode, we're talking about how Bando evolved into a lifestyle brand that it is today, why having a strong brand is the best thing you can do for your business, and the importance of making time for self-reflection, no matter how many years you've been in business. Jen, thank you so much for sitting down with me today. I really appreciate you making the time to come on the podcast.
You are very welcome. I'm happy to do it, Katie.
So when you started Bando, did you envision that it would become the lifestyle brand that it is today?
I feel like the answer is going to be a very obvious no. I did think I was going to be a millionaire within about 3 weeks. But,
of course.
which is one of my greatest downfalls, not being able to do math. But no, I didn't. You know, there wasn't a plan. It was an outlet more than anything else. It wasn't as entrepreneurial as like we just found a hole in the market and, you know, we were going to fill it with this product and scale and grow. I didn't know what any of that meant. It was just like, we want to be creative. We're making these hair accessories that people seem to think are cool. And how many would we have to sell to make $1 million? And then that's where I got off course.
Well, it's so funny that you say that because I used to tell my husband when I had Kelp Designs, my stationery brand, well, if I sell 1 million cards, then I could leave my day job. Or like that was kind of our benchmark for things we wanted to do. When I sell 1 million cards.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is like, I remember when we started and we were setting up, you know, accounts and you had passwords. And so our password for I'll give this out now because this is no longer our password, but our password for everything was Bando 10,000. Cause I was like, what if we made $10,000?
Right.
Like, what will happen when we make $10,000? What will we buy?
then you'll change your password to 100,000.
Exactly.
Bando 100,000.
So now you can guess what it is now. It's a, you know, Bando gazillion.
Right, right. That's awesome. So for those that aren't aware, you did start as headbands and flower crowns and fun things like that, which was more in the vintage world. And now your brand is so different and it's evolved so much. You know, what were some transitional pivot points in that journey?
Yeah, sure. Well, there were many, but we did start out just selling. They were vintage, one-of-a-kind pieces.
Right.
So there's no real way to scale a business like that. So one of our first pivot points was, let's make things that we can produce more than one of the same thing so we could get a credit in a magazine and then actually have that item in stock to sell. Then our price points were from $95 to like four something. Mm-hmm. So much different also than a lot of the price points, at least on our website now, there's definitely broader price points, but our inline product are still pretty much under 50,
mm-hmm.
although there are a few exceptions. But the recession hit shortly after we launched the line and a lot of people were asking for our under 50 story. And so we expanded also by creating like these different price point lines,
mm-hmm.
which ended up eventually melding back in. But I think once we had figured out like pricing and being able to replicate, we kind of sailed on that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't probably for a couple of years before we were like, maybe we should try and make some other products. You know, the hair accessories are really niche and knowing everything I know now, we wouldn't have been able to achieve what we were sort of destined to do just mm-hmm. with accessories. But I think we were just starting to feel a sense of like we could apply our sensibility to things outside of a bobby pin or a headband. And it would be easier because you have a lot more surface
right
area to apply to. So we found someone who could make phone cases for us, and she had like 200 cases that we could buy, and there was like a very small printable area. So we were like, we'll just print a red heart on it. That was sort of our logo. And they sold out like within like an hour or two on our website.
Wow.
And like, maybe we should be making other things. We never had that happen with a hair accessory. So that was a big sort of light bulb moment for us. So then we started kind of like pursuing some other things, you know, outside of things that we were internally deciding. We were approached by Anthropology probably in our, might have been early in our second year, mm-hmm. or late in our first, to create some stuff for them. So that was a huge, you know, we really weren't wholesaling that much until we sold the business. Like, I think we had like 10 wholesale accounts, one of which was Anthropology. Mm-hmm. So that was huge for us and a huge learning curve. And we sort of went in knowing like, we're not going to make any money from this because we don't understand how to give Anthro the margins that they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we knew that that was going to be an important thing for brand presence. And so we made it work, and we learned a lot about production and margins and.
Oh yeah. Trial and error, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. So that felt like we were growing up a little bit.
You mentioned selling the business, and in 2012, you sold the business to Lifeguard Press. And I was curious, was that a tough decision for you?
No, not at all. It was in one sense, a necessity of sorts. My partner, who I started the company with, Jamie, was needing to leave the state. And mm-hmm. we just felt like we weren't going to be able to run. I mean, neither of us were really truly business people. She was much better at math than I was, but you know, we both really fancied ourselves creatives, and I felt like I'm not going to be able to do this on my own. I didn't want to take on a huge investment. We had a handful of employees at that time, and I didn't, you know, I felt responsible for them. So mm-hmm. we were like, let's try and sell. You know, we certainly had no business trying to sell at that point. Like our revenue did not warrant, you know, being like, we should, you know, we could make money off this. But we, you know, we spoke to a lot of people and just got incredibly lucky with being Todd and Kim, the owners of Lifeguard Press, and honestly have not ever once, knock on wood, regretted that decision. You know, it's been 5 years, and it completely changed our business.
I was just going to ask, how has working under Lifeguard Press essentially, yeah, how has that enabled you to grow and expand into new product categories?
Well, for me personally, they would certainly tell you that I don't appear to work under anyone.
I should rephrase that.
Even though I have several bosses, somehow I feel like I can convince them that I'm in charge of them on some days. And they're like, how did you do that? But, you know, it changed us in every way while also maintaining the integrity of what we were really trying to do, which we hadn't even articulated to anyone, even ourselves at that point.
Yeah.
But they never tried to, you know, I stayed on for that very reason. They wanted me there to keep the creative direction of the brand. And what they were able to do was apply what they knew about product development, sourcing, production, manufacturing, distribution, sales. You know, we didn't know how to do any of that really. We were figuring it out slowly, but on that timeline, you know, I would be at retirement age before we really made the inroads we needed to make. So they really, and what we had, they were looking for. You know, they do licensing for larger brands, and they were looking for a company that had its own brand voice and that could, you know, they could apply it to the types of products that they were making. Primarily at that point was like a, you know, gift industry, very paper heavy, mm-hmm. some tech. And so it feels very much like a match made in heaven. And even just like the personalities of everyone, like we just gelled, very quickly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been amazing.
Well, and I feel like you can still lead the creative charge. So you're using you know, your zone of genius, as they say, and applying it to all the things, like they're handling all the stuff you didn't necessarily want to learn or have to learn.
For sure. Well, and what I'm finding out even now as we've grown and, you know, the business has evolved a lot. And even like I was saying, like since we last spoke, like, the, right. you know, it's so different. But I think like the thing with me is I'm a problem solver by nature. So I walk towards problems, not away from them, but I have no business walking towards half of the things that I do because like my talent doesn't lie in some of those things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a huge thing of what they brought. Like they sort of could kind of block me from some of that. And now we're at another phase where I'm like, can you block me some more? Because I can feel myself getting into things that are not creative, but are more related to like how the business runs or efficiency or communication or,
yeah.
And it's just my nature to like see something and want to solve it. So they were, you know, finally having someone that had expertise outside of my own was amazing. And like, just like, I'm not the type of person that feels inferior in that situation, you know, because I feel confident in the skills that I have. And I love having people around me that are smarter and better and have a different knowledge base than I do. And now I'm just getting to the point where I realize like, I can't do everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to have those people. And they're almost like, yeah, we've been waiting for you to realize that. just go away.
Well, it sounds like a very good match from not yeah. only, you know, knowledge base and interest levels as well in terms of what you're handling and what they're handling. Yeah. Let's switch gears a little bit. What is the hardest lesson that you've learned in business?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about that and, you know, part of what I just said, I think was definitely a big lesson where I realized like sheer will not allow me to do it all and be great at everything. And I think I'm pretty good, like pretty quick on the uptake. So like I hadn't really met my match yet as far as like there wasn't a skill that I didn't feel like I could learn good enough to like, you know, do something with it. So mm-hmm. that's been a big thing. And then I really think the other big lesson, which applies to life too, and is a lesson I've learned in life, that like everything that they quote unquote say is gonna happen happens, you know. You know, when you grow that, you know, how are you going to keep the sensibility that you had as a company when there were four people, when they're 40? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like, that won't happen to us because we're Bandel and like, we inherently know how to solve those things. And it happened, you know, it's like, it comes for you, like those archetypes of, you know, the things that happen, like there's no way around them. And so I think it was like just knowing that, appreciating that my business is special, but that it's not so special that it's absolved of like everything that happens to businesses.
Right.
Has been, I don't know if hard is the right word, but more of just like very enlightening, mm-hmm. you know? So we're getting through it. I still think that businesses should have therapists on staff, but I can't really get anybody to get behind that. I mean, I'm sure like huge tech companies have that. I know they have nap rooms, but I'm like, man, it would be so cool if there was just like a therapist to just talk about it, like business related. Well, and non-business related
right.
stuff.
Right. Oh, I love that.
Work it out. Yeah.
That would be nice. Just like a nap room.
Yeah. Well, I think too, like for individuals, you know, some of the stuff that keeps people from like reaching their potential and their job is a personal, something personal that they just would need to work through. But I don't know. It's part of my long-term plan, but
we're not there yet.
I just got Summer Fridays approved. So
I was going to say, Deborah told me you guys had Summer Fridays and I'm like, that's amazing. Yeah. That's a great
I've been trying. When there were still just like five of us, I was really trying to push for a 4-day work week. I felt like we worked enough in 4 days that would be, you know, could cover five if we spread it out. And they were like, yeah, I'm like, let me, you know, like I was like working on it. And then we started this like hiring thing. And then it's much harder to apply that to a larger group. So
yeah, I was going to say that's one of those problems that as you grow and scale and work with other people, it comes a little bit outside your own zone of saying, okay, let's do this.
I know. Yeah.
So when you spoke at our Trade Show Bootcamp Business Camp conference, you encouraged our audience to focus on building a strong brand. Why do you feel that way?
Well, partly I think I feel that way because that's what I know. I'm very drawn to brands. I think I always have been. I'm not necessarily like a label person, but I think I've always liked that sort of like broad concept applied to a lot of things, but it, you know, it sort of makes sense. And, you know, I feel like, especially when you're in the product industry, being able to have a voice that stands outside of the product just makes it easier for people to attach to your business. It makes it easier for your business to pivot if you have to, which I feel like we've done several times. If we had like a medium strength brand that was tied to, you know, we make banana holders and then there's like a banana shortage or something, like how do we do that if mm-hmm. it's like all based on that? And so I feel like, you know, for us, diversity and just a strength in the brand outside of it being connected to any specific product or product segment has always kept like a very open door. Mm-hmm. And I think that people, you know, we're obviously like very tied to millennials, although, you know, that changes a lot too, but millennials look for that sort of those sorts of identities too. I think they don't want it to feel like anonymous and faceless and without like a point of view. So, I don't think that's the only way to do it, but it's the way that I've done it. So I think that's why I advocate for it, because I understand and I've seen it work. But maybe you could find somebody that sells banana holders that has a different point of view.
Yes. Well, no, I agree with you. I think having a strong brand, it has a trickle down effect too, right? Yeah. Like it helps you hone in on who your customer is and how you're talking to them. And it just creates consistency across the board, in my opinion.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, even for us, and I think like we've, you know, I feel like we've always had a strong brand before we even identified that. And, you know, we've really spent a lot of time over the last year kind of figuring out how do we want to articulate who we are. So it's like we didn't really have like a mission statement and brand pillars. And it wasn't until we started like hiring in outside people that like had business experience, they were like, well, what's your point? And I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, we just all knew it. But we're in sort of like this interesting phase of our lives here where we're like doing a lot of discovery and articulation. And it's just interesting because it just creates a lot of new conversations for us as a brand. And it does help you understand, like you said, your customer, but also yourself. So you can mm-hmm. start to plot like where you want to go and what makes sense for your brand and your business. And without an identity, it's like too vague. It'd just be too hard.
It's too tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's refreshing to hear you talk about this as somebody that's been in business a while and have had these changes and transformations, because I know a lot of the people listening to this podcast, well, frankly, they run the gamut. There's some that are just starting out in their business, but there's people that have been doing this a while too. And I've been talking to a lot of my clients recently, and it seems like all of us are going through this self-reflection mm-hmm. period right now, whether they've been doing it 1 year or doing it 8 years or 10 years or more. And I think it's just reassuring to hear you talk about it too, simply from the fact that this is something we need to continue revisiting as we grow our business.
Agreed. And I think, you know, people are getting savvier and mm-hmm. smarter and more demanding, not in a negative way, but like they want to know that, you know, like I think just everything that's going on in the world has made everyone do some introspecting. And so people have questions that are different than the questions they used to have. And they hold companies and brands accountable for things that they never had to be accountable for before, you know? So it's like hard to even answer some of those questions until you know, well, what can we stand for? And what, you know, So I think it's a very interesting time to be in business, especially for like our group of business people and entrepreneurs that really maybe didn't take the traditional route, but did it because the internet existed and it was really easy to start a business because you didn't have to have a brick and mortar store. You just bought a domain and you were up and running.
Yep.
And, you know, so I think like we all have the opportunity to come at it from a different perspective and really kind of redefine some of those, you know, things that have been a certain way about for business for a very long time. Like I think we could stand to revolutionize a lot of that. So it definitely starts with like introspecting as if your brand was a person.
Yep.
And that's what we've been doing a lot of. Yeah. Good to figure that stuff out.
It definitely is. Why is it important for you to give back and support other entrepreneurs in your journey? I mean, you've spoken to our group in the past. I've heard you speak at other programs. And I know you've done some mentoring on a one-on-one basis too. Why is this an important aspect of what you're doing?
I think a lot of it stemmed from really being so connected in my memory to the part where we were starting our business and we just had no idea, you know, and we didn't really, Jamie had a couple people that we could ask, but like there just wasn't, I mean, the internet wasn't in exactly the same place. Well, at least social media specifically, it was like Instagram didn't even really exist at that point. Or if it had, no one, because I feel like it was a couple of years before we really like started engaging with that. So like you just didn't have that community. And I don't know, it's like, you're not going to go in a chat room. So I think it was like, it really was. And honestly, for a lot of my careers, like it really has been like the kindness of strangers or just like the happenstance of meeting someone who was willing to give me a little insight and they didn't even know that they were giving me insight and how impactful that was and how if we didn't have that, we would have missed out. Like there wouldn't be Bando. And it's such an easy thing and it actually is fulfilling for both parties. So the one-on-one mentoring is this, it's called Honor Roll. It's a free advice series that we did a few years ago. We're bringing it back starting like very soon. I feel like there's something on my calendar in the next few weeks, but it was about giving free advice to people. And you could meet with not just me, but anyone on the team. So if you were a social media person, you could, you know, meet with that person. If you were a designer, you could meet with one of our designers. If you were into sourcing. And, you know, it's funny because in the days leading up, the girls were getting really nervous and like, am I going to be able to help them? And I don't know what to say. And then after we did it the first time, like they were so like, just like high on life. They were just like, this was so cool. And I'm like, I told you it was going to be just as good for you as it was for them. Cause you realize that you know more than you think you know, cause you're not having to actively like get that information out. But when someone asks you, so I think it's important. And then I feel like with artists, you know, we have for a long time, first out of the fact that none of us were really artists. So we were like, how do we, when we were making our first agenda, I was like, I don't know how to draw. And Allie, our art director now, but she was our like graphic designer at the time. She's like, I can't really draw that either. I'm like, well, let's just call one of our friends who's an illustrator. And then we just started like, it just got baked into our concept of like outside artists. And I mean, a lot of those people are creative entrepreneurs. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things with larger companies where there, you know, there isn't that human element where they're thinking about how they can expose those people and their work and shine a bright light on that. And that's just so important. And there's nothing that doesn't take away from anything that we're doing by saying like, we want to help these people too.
Right.
But I think it's sometimes that goes against the traditional concepts of business where, you know, it's like business is very sort of like black and white. And I feel like we've been able to like gray it up a little bit by saying like, that doesn't take anything away from us if we credit the artist and drive some traffic and business to them too. So we're really challenging ourselves actually in the next year to figure out how we can even do that more. Because it's really up until this point been quite casual just because it wasn't a priority. It was just a passion of mine. But what happens like as your business grows is like those passions, if they're not like locked in on a PowerPoint, they just don't get to the right people.
Right.
And I don't know how to use PowerPoint, so mine never get there. So, like, we got to figure this out. So yeah.
I want to go back to something you said about your team and how they sat down with people and they were kind of astounded by, it sounded like they were astounded by how much they got out of it yeah. too. And one thing we do at Paper Camp is one-on-one sessions with the students, and they're short sessions, but they walk away with so much information. And frankly, I walk away feeling so fulfilled because I got to have these like quick brainstorms and like, you know, flex some muscles that I maybe haven't flexed in a while. And the other thing is too, as you mentioned, you forget sometimes the things that we know because these become our day-to-day routine.
Yeah.
They're things
yeah.
we do all the time now. It's so you forget that somebody else is coming up and doesn't know that stuff. So it's,
Well, honestly, that I think was one of our biggest challenges with onboarding. Like, you know, we brought on so many new people and we were really challenged to articulate the how and why mm-hmm. of a lot of what we do, because we just inherently knew that because we've been doing, you know, there's like a core group of us that have been working on Bandel for so long that we literally can just communicate with our eyes to each other. It's right. very weird, but you know, then when you want to try and onboard someone and explain to them why, you're like, I don't even have words for some of these feelings.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is interesting and it's good to like sort of have to force yourself to think about things. And then also some things come up and it's like, oh, you probably shouldn't do that. That doesn't make sense anymore. Good thing we talked about that.
But okay, let's talk about that a little bit. How do you know when to transition away from something that's maybe not working, either internally for your team or maybe it's a product that you put out to market that's not taking off like you'd like?
Yeah, I am horrible at that. I'm a loyalist, so I don't transition away from anything. So I basically need to be like hit over the head with a frying pan before I'm like, oh, that's not working. What I have learned from other people is sort of understanding figure out where in your body or in your mind you get the feeling when something's not right anymore mm-hmm. and like really getting in tune to that, you know, or when you find yourself sort of like ruminating over the same thing or complaining over the same thing, even if it's just in passing. Like I feel like now when I sort of hear myself like complain or like just like whine about the same thing like 10 times in a row, I'm like, I probably need to like address this because you know it's not working. I think as far as products go, that's much harder because they're your babies, you know. Right. So you're just like, I don't want to get rid of that. Like, what if one person likes that? I've gotten a lot better at that. I am also not heavily involved in that like I was years ago. Mm-hmm. But I really think the best thing to do is to find a way to remove emotion from it. So create a formula that is based on numbers, because product really is. And then just decide how you're going to make those cuts and then just make them. And then if something gets cut and you feel absolutely awful, you'll know the difference between just being like, oh, I'm sad to see that go, and like, I absolutely cannot see that go. Yeah. Then you make exceptions or address that or identify, like, can you comp that product with another product that feels more relevant but does a similar thing or whatever. So I feel like that was a hard thing. We never wanted to get rid of anything, but then you also just have too much stuff and right. You know, you don't want to do that either. So no. I do think it's like taking, you know, the biggest beauty of selling the company and bringing in these people that weren't emotionally tied and weren't the creative is much easier for them to make those decisions.
Yeah.
It's just another product for them, not in a like rude or neglectful way, but it's just easier for them. So it's like, if you can do that, I mean, obviously not everyone has the luxury of some of the resources that I have, especially when you have a small business, but even if it's just like a consultant or a friend you trust or whatever. Sometimes it's just like, I feel like as a founder or as a creative, there's just certain things that we aren't meant to do. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly one of them, because that's like killing your babies. I don't know.
No,
you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you are tied to that. So you're just like, it's just harder than it should be.
Absolutely. And you can look at the numbers and the spreadsheets and all the sales data you want, but it's still, it has that personal side of it too, right? Like you said,
yeah.
it's your work. So it's hard.
Yeah.
How often are you guys releasing new products, and how often are you removing things from your line? Do you have like a set schedule for your releases?
Yeah, we have tried a couple different things over the last like year and a half. We were delivering, so it's a little bit different because on our website, we're releasing new stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Because now we have like third party stuff too. And then we'll also like for our Bando inline, sometimes we'll hold things and just like drip feed it out instead mm-hmm. of just like dropping everything at once, which is what we used to do. But from a wholesale standpoint, when we started, we had two deliveries, you know, front end of the year and back half. And then we cut it up to like spring, summer, back to school mm-hmm. with agendas, and then like a fall. And then about a year ago, we decided to split those three deliveries into six deliveries.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because we found that retailers were wanting newness more often. And so we didn't necessarily like double the SKU count. We just kind of more meaningfully separated it. We definitely added SKUs of like products that they wanted to see. Like, let's say they wanted like notebooks four times a year instead of twice a year, or, you know, whatever it was. We kind of just like looked at what the demand was dictating and tried to break it up accordingly. So it was like a little bit less bulky. But honestly, I feel like with the way that retail is going now, I don't know that I'm not even sure that desire is, I'm not sold on it. I think that there's still probably something for like just the three times a year mm-hmm. and then allowing your accounts to merchandise it and distribute it however they see fit. And mm-hmm. then again, like for us, the beauty is like we have this wholesale business and then we have our retail business and we treat them kind of differently. Yep. So like we're controlling the story fully on our website.
You have so many SKUs too that frankly, if you did release three times a year, your retail accounts could easily buy enough to merchandise it in different ways that it still looked fresh and new and would be new to their customers.
Totally. I mean, we could probably do that with half the SKUs we have. I'm honestly like, maybe we like, I'm doing a lot of like trying to look at that and make sure that it is meaningful and that, you know, when you're dealing with wholesalers, like really, really clarifying that the demand is really there. Mm-hmm. You know, I think buyers are just trying to do their best too. It's not that, you know, they have this authority and this authoritative position over us as the people that are selling to them. But I think sometimes they don't know, you know, nothing against them, obviously, no. Like, but it's like, we're all trying, but everything is sort of based on hypotheticals. There's, yeah. you know, there's anything can change at any time. So I think it's like, I know for us, I'm trying to always challenge us to get better about taking in all of that feedback from salespeople and buyers and then figuring out what's going to make what we think makes sense and what we're able to do.
Absolutely. I tell that to my clients all the time of it's great to get the feedback from your buyers and it's great to hear what they want and don't want, but you can't take any one person's opinion as gold. You know, you have to kind of look at the collective feedback. And
it's true. And that's a dangerous thing and very easy to do. And mm-hmm. we have fallen victim to that many, many, many times. So yeah. You know, it is what it is.
Totally. Definitely. So what advice do you have for entrepreneurs that are running product-based businesses? I mean, you just dropped a lot of information about your releases and all these other things, but in general, for somebody that's just starting out, what would you tell them?
I think it's important to be thoughtful about what you're doing. You know, I think I even might've even said this years ago, you know, like ask around to see if this product seems viable, if there is like a demand or a desire for it. And you obviously have to be hugely excited about it because, as you know, product-based businesses are very challenging businesses. Mm-hmm. It's different than service or content or, you know, there's a lot of responsibility in that because you're holding inventory and you're doing, you know, it's a different thing. So I think it's like try and contain the excitement you have for what you're doing and put it through, a little bit of a strainer and pace yourself. And I also just think there's like, as someone who I feel like sells a lot of cute stuff, I think there's a threshold for that too. So I think, you know, it's like really being able to kind of keep yourself in check and know that sometimes it's almost like when I go to the swap meet now, I've realized like sometimes I don't have to buy the thing. I could just take a picture of it and I can have that satisfaction. I think it's the same, you know, like especially if you're in paper, it's like, do you need to make that greeting card or could you just like make one and put it on your wall? Mm-hmm. And, you know, does the world need that? And so I think it's just like being critical in that way mm-hmm. is important because it's like, it's a weird thing because you need to have this excitement for what you're doing, but I think it's disorienting at times and it makes you think that things are worthwhile that aren't. So mm-hmm. figuring out whether you're going to be able to figure that out on your own or who's going to tell you. I thankfully have a lot of people that tell me when my ideas don't work or are not good.
It's good to have those people around you yeah. for sure.
I mean, they were also wrong on several occasions. So I like to remind them of that year on the year anniversary that they told me something wouldn't work and it did.
But I like that. I like that you probably keep that in your agenda too.
They hate me. Yeah. No.
So something you talked about at business camp also, it was a specific slide that you used that said focus on top level shit was probably regrammed or like Instagrammed oh my God. Like 100 times. I think everyone at the conference regrammed it. When you talk about focusing on the highest level things,
yeah.
Can you elaborate on that a bit for the
absolutely.
Podcast
absolutely. And as you're saying it, I'm like, what did I mean by that? But I do remember what I meant. And you know, it's sort of what I was talking about earlier. And it's funny to think about it now because I'm like, man, I still forget to do that. Like, that's literally what I'm dealing with right now. If you know, I think because at a lot of those speaking engagements, I was talking to founders or mm-hmm. business owners and I think like what happens is it's really easy to focus on like medium level shit because those things tend to have a beginning, middle, and end, and you can check it off your to-do list. And sometimes as people, we need like a substantive sense of accomplishment for the day, the week, the month. So you need the checks.
Agree.
But the reality is the faster you can figure out what it is that only you can do. And if you've created the company, then it's going to be top level shit because it's like, there's going to be a lot of things that you could outsource, but like, you know, knowing what's best or where you're going to go next or what's the, you know, being the visionary, there won't be a lot of people that can do that. So just kind of holding yourself accountable to not get into the minutia. Like, I mean, I think I was like still reading the Bando inbox, like our website inbox for many years. And, after we sold the company, Todd, one of the owners, was like, don't read that. That's such a waste of your time. I'm like, I need to know. He's like, there are people for that. Like, don't. I'm like, but they won't know what to tell them. They won't use the right word. They won't read. Well, write down the words you want. Write down the tone you want. You can't look at that anymore. That is like beneath you. And not in like a super hierarchical way, but like, you know, essentially I'm getting paid to do something, and whether you're getting paid by someone else or you have to account for your time some way. I mean, it's good, very important to know what you think your hourly rate is, mm-hmm. even if you're not paying yourself that, so that you can understand like, well, am I paying myself $100 an hour to answer emails, or like, am I, you know, forecasting what I'm going to do for next spring?
Right. I was just talking with a client about this the other day because she's in the position where she really needs to be outsourcing or bringing people on. And I've talked a lot about this. It doesn't have to be a full-time salaried person.
No.
It could be part-time contractor, whatever it is. But I made her go through that exercise and we figured out what her hourly rate was. And for example, here, I'm just going to say it was $100. And I'm like, for $15 or $20, you could get a virtual assistant to do those same things. Look at the difference in costs there. You could be spending that hour doing $100 projects and, you know, paying the $20 or whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really important revelation to have because usually you're not paying yourself anything. I mean, we didn't really pay ourselves. I think I was making $3 an hour or something for a long time. But what was my time really valued at for mm-hmm. the company or what did I think my time was worth? And then, it became clear that like to pay someone $10, $12, $15 an hour made a lot of sense to mm-hmm. free up, you know, the time. Because it's like, yeah, those things, the medium and low level stuff still needs to get done.
Yep.
It's not, you know, I mean, that's the hard part of having a business. Like, it all has to get done. But you really, the faster you can figure out where you add the most value and what you should be doing and what someone else should be doing, like the, you'll grow and scale. It just makes it a lot easier.
I'm sitting here nodding my head yes to the point where it may fall off. I wholeheartedly agree with you. Oh, so tell us what's next for Bando. Where are you guys headed the rest of the year?
I'd like to retire. No, I say that every day. We got 401ks earlier this year, and the guy was like, I was like, first of all, I don't even understand what a 401k is. And then he was asking me about like, at what age would I retire? And I was like, I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm going to die at work. So I had never really considered it. And he was like, oh, okay. But we're, you know, and more of the same this year. We're launching our apparel that we've been working on, mostly graphic tees and, you know, other tops and some jackets and stuff, into wholesale right now, actually. And so we'll just be doing more of that. I think that really at this point, we're planning a lot into next year. Mm-hmm. And 2018 is our 10-year Bando birthday.
Oh, so happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. So the only thing that's cool, that's like the only good age to get older. I'm like, it's not as cool to get older as a person, but no. As a brand, it's like, yeah, we did it. So I think, you know, for next year, we're really looking to, like I said, articulate who we are as a brand and pronounce the things outside of just selling products that are important to us. So I think you'll see more of philanthropic things, more community building things, more with supporting artists. And then from a product standpoint, you know, I feel actually a bit reluctant to, as producers of product, venture into too many more categories because mm-hmm. now we've got a handbag line, apparel, tech, paper, fitness. I mean, it's sort of endless. So I feel like for us, I would want to continue to refine the products that we actually produce and then work more meaningfully with a lot of our third-party vendors to create designs that are custom for us, but that we don't have to own the beginning, middle, end of the process.
Right. That's great.
So I think it's going to be good. I mean, you know, there's so much happening in the digital space, and I think we have a real opportunity with our website to do something different than what I see out there. So I have a lot of my focus is on that, how to be cool on the internet.
Well, you're doing a good job of that. I promise you that.
I'm trying.
Speaking of, yes, we all are trying to be cool even when we don't feel so cool. But speaking of online, where can people find you online if they're not already following you?
Yeah, sure. Well, our website is bando.com. Our Instagram is shopbando. And that will lead, between those two things, will lead you to everything else. And I have a very personal Instagram account that's just Jen Gotch. And yeah, that's how you find us. You can probably find my address too if you look hard enough. No one's come over yet, but
I'll be there this weekend to say hi.
Yeah.
So I'll bring the wine.
I don't have air conditioning.
Well, let's find somewhere that has air then. Well, Jen, thank you so much for your time today. It was so much fun to sit down and talk shop with you. You've done an amazing job of growing this brand and refining everything that you're offering. And I thank you for all you do for the creative community.
Well, that's nice. You're welcome. And it was nice to talk to you and see you too, Katie.
Thanks, Jen. Are you feeling a bit stuck in your business? Maybe you're worried about things like marketing, technology, or hiring a team. If so, you are not alone, and we've got a course for you. The Business Camp eCourse includes lessons from Tara Gentile, Jen Gotch of Bando, Chelsea of Sugar Paper, as well as experts in public relations, websites, email marketing, and much, much more. This course includes 8 hours of video content and a 30-page workbook. You will finish this course feeling confident, energized, and armed with concrete information to help you refine your business systems. Plus, the on-demand format lets you jump around to topics that are most relevant to you when you need them most. As you guys know by now, I'm a firm believer in working smarter, not harder, and this course is going to help you streamline your business, whether you're product-based or service-based business. So head over to tsbcbizcamp.com, that's tsbcbizcamp.com,
for more information. And for a limited time, our Proof to Product customers, or listeners rather, are going to get $50 off with promo code Proof to Product.
Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.